You're listening to Creepy Unsolved. What is up, everyone? Dylan speaking, and thank you for joining me on this episode of Creepy Unsolved. Today's episode is a podcast version of my recent YouTube video covering the strange death of tech CEO Erin Valeni and her striking last words, "We're in the Matrix." But before we begin, and while I have your attention, I want to invite you to visit our website, creepyunsolved.com. It is our one-stop shop for all of our podcast episodes, YouTube videos, and the Creepy Unsolved blog. Would you like to support the show? You can do so for just $2 a month. That's less than the price of a cup of coffee. Visit our Patreon link in the show notes below. One last thing, and before we begin, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Recently, I had a listener reach out to us to tell us that their favorite episode was the medieval serial killer. Do you have a favorite episode? A future story suggestion or guest suggestion? Or simply want to say hi? Send us an email at creepyunsolvedmedia@gmail.com. Now with all of that out of the way, let's begin. On Monday, October 7th, 2019, after finishing their anniversary dinner in New York, Agnes and Joseph Valeni were on the phone with their daughter, Erin Valeni. Their 33-year-old daughter was a successful businesswoman and tech CEO, who at the time of the call was 2,900 miles away in Palo Alto, California. From New York and throughout the day, they had been in constant contact with Erin, who was visiting California for a tech conference, a workshop, and to have a discussion amongst her peers about future business ventures. But when Erin called this time, things were different. Erin was distraught, slightly panicked, and she couldn't locate her rental car, a gray Nissan Murano. Agnes and Joseph stayed on the line during the duration of her search, and luckily, she did end up finding her car. Although when she did, the conversation took a bizarre turn. Agnes and Joseph Valeni would later recount that Erin started speaking erratically, at a mile a minute, and making very little sense. It was of their opinion that their daughter was having an unusual manic episode. According to Joseph, she was talking about coming home for Thanksgiving one second, until finally, and before hanging up with her parents for the very last time, she said, "It's all a game. It's a thought experiment. We're in the Matrix. I'm going to miss my flight." This outlandish compilation of words would be the very last phrase Erin spoke to her parents before she was found deceased 5 days later on October 12th in the backseat of her rental car in San Jose. With no visible sign of foul play or viable cause of death, questions abound as to the circumstances of her death. Was Erin the victim of foul play, or is it possible she took her own life? What did she mean when she said, "We're in the Matrix"? What could cause Erin Valeni, a woman with no known history of mental illness or substance abuse, to speak so erratically to her parents the night she disappeared? And why couldn't law enforcement find her any sooner? Erin Valeni was born in 1986 to Joseph and Agnes in Fairport, New York, and would grow up in Salt Lake City, Utah. Her friends and family described her as highly ambitious, active, and an outgoing woman, earning her the nickname of Armageddon Erin due to her boisterous personality and odd propensity for being at the location of a natural disaster right when it occurred. She was known as a lover of writing, climbing, and yoga, and often surrounded herself with friends and family. Even as a child, her drive and determination to succeed were some of her defining characteristics according to those around her. Erin would graduate from Georgetown University with a degree in finance and international business and go on to climb the corporate ladder. She had spent some of her time as the head of product development for Overstock.com and eventually founded Tinker, a website and application development company, working as their CEO. At the time of her disappearance, Erin was living in Salt Lake City, Utah, with her husband, Harrison Weinstein, who worked as a psychologist. But beyond her success in the business world, it was the time, money, and effort she put towards humanitarian endeavors that made her stand out as an individual. Erin was also a volunteer for Not For Sale, an organization dedicated towards fighting human trafficking by creating sustainable living and economic conditions and helping at-risk communities to create their own businesses. She was known to spend her time mentoring and educating refugee entrepreneurs. Erin was beloved and respected by many of her friends, family, and colleagues. One of the accolades that she was supposed to receive was an award in her honor at a conference for women in the tech industry. But when Erin failed to appear at the conference in Utah to acknowledge her recognition on Tuesday, October 8th, it became apparent to all that she did indeed miss her flight the night before. Alarmed by this, Erin's parents and husband were quick in their attempts to file a missing persons report with the San Jose Police Department. But despite their overwhelming concerns and in-depth explanation of their worries, the San Jose Police Department failed to be moved. They explained, just as is heard in many other missing person cases, that Erin Villani had a right to go missing. Two additional days would pass until Erin was officially reported missing on October 10th. Following the official filing, the San Jose Police Department would perform a lackluster attempt in their search. A few police units were dispatched to drive through the local neighborhoods, and they were asked to keep a lookout for the gray Nissan Murano. Whether it be due to the casual efforts or the fact that Erin Villani wasn't in the area at the time of the patrols, no trace of the vehicle or Erin could be found. Unsatisfied with the efforts of the San Jose Police Department, Harrison Weinstein started a Facebook page called Help Find Erin Villani, in which he pleaded with the public for any help or leads that may aid in the finding of his wife. With an outpouring of support from people online and locals in the Bay Area, volunteers set out to patrol the streets of the San Jose area to see if anyone could find the whereabouts of Erin Villani. On Saturday, October 12th, one of these volunteers finally located the rental car, parked in a quiet residential area on the 6500 block of Bose Lane in San Jose's Almaden neighborhood, only a half mile from Erin's last known location. Erin was discovered deceased in the back seat of the car, and according to the police, there were no visible signs of violence or foul play. Her family took to Facebook later that day to announce to the public that she had passed away, and mourners would later visit the site of her discovery, offering messages of condolences and sympathy to Erin and her family. Joseph Villani later expressed his frustration to the media about the lack of urgency on the part of the San Jose Police Department. It was of his belief that if they had taken more action, then perhaps the police could have discovered Erin sooner and provided her with the care and protection that she so obviously needed. He called their initial actions in searching for her a charade, pointing out that police didn't file the missing person report until Tuesday after she went missing, and that they classified her as voluntarily missing, despite missing a scheduled flight for an important event. The San Jose Police Department offered no response to the media at the time, as the results of the coroner's examination had still been pending. Questions, rumors, and speculation began to circulate online and within the media about the nature and cause of Erin's death. What had led her to say those final words? We're in the Matrix. If Erin had no history of mental illness or substance abuse, what caused her to change? Could it have been some undiagnosed condition, like so many online speculators suggest? And if the San Jose Police Department had acted sooner, could Erin have possibly been saved? Unfortunately, for those close to Erin, there would be few satisfactory answers provided to them, even upon the release of her autopsy and toxicology report. According to BusinessInsider.com, the coroner determined that Erin's cause of death was of natural causes following an acute manic episode. Harrison, a professional psychologist, maintained to the press that his wife had zero history of any mental illnesses, psychosis, or substance abuse, and she was on no pharmaceutical medications of any kind. Fellow co-workers at Tinker also reported no noticeable change in her behavior prior to her trip to California. Erin's friends and family said that she was constantly surrounded by people close to her, and they noticed nothing odd or different either. Then what could have caused a manic episode that ended her life? This unusual conclusion, made at her autopsy, only fueled further speculation. A simple search of Erin Valenti's name online would likely lead to message boards with theories of the paranormal or the conspiratorial explanations. What did Erin witness that could have led her to believe that we are all in the Matrix? But there are also other entries online written by doctors and psychologists who suggest that Erin could have suffered from an undiagnosed condition and that dying of natural causes during an acute episode, while extremely rare, is possible under the right conditions. In the next part of this video, we'll explore some popular theories surrounding Erin's case. I want to make it a point to state, I'm not implying any theory is truthful, or that I agree with any individual theory. This is just what is floating around online, and is worth some thought. In the early weeks of November 2019, an eco-terrorist group known as Individualist, tending towards the wild U.S. Nature's Wrath, commonly abbreviated as ITS, stepped forward to claim responsibilities for not only Erin Valenti's death, but another tech executive, Tusher Arte. Their claims of responsibility could first be seen in a posting on the group's website, Maldición Eco Extremista, on November 9, 2019. It reads as follows, quote, "Our thirst for blood has been satisfied, and we praise Pan and Dionysus, and all of the unknowable for leading us to this action. Like the predators of the forest, we caught the scent of our prey and acted from our hunger for human flesh. We shit on all Western morality and all the American anarchist naysayers. We rejoiced as death itself rose from the underwater world as our personal accomplice. After the action, we celebrated, fornicating while the sweet blood of our victims remained fresh on our hands. Wishing death to all civilization, our group of extremists happily murdered two tech executives in the West Coast, Tusher Arte and Erin Valenti. We conducted these killings for no other reason than the symbolism of seeing two flimsy appendages of the techno-industrial system laying first in agony and then motionless before us. We gave no fuck about Arte and his money or his employees and how he abused them, although the very real fake news claims correctly that he was mixed in with the wrong crowd. We laughed as Valenti became aroused at her kidnapping, and as she pleaded with her parents to become awoken in the hours before her death. The Underwater Panther was pleased with her sacrifice, which she seems to have accepted. We came before both victims yelling, Hoka Hey, in the memory of our tribal ancestors who only remain chiefs of war if the balance of bodies is maintained." End quote. ITS has shown a history of claims to multiple deaths of different persons since their founding in Mexico in 2011. In 2011, they claimed to have taken the life of a nanotechnology research scientist. Years later, in 2017, they claimed the murder of Leslie Berlin Rivera Osorio, leaving a statement about her death stating, "Every human being merits extinction." In the same year, they would claim the deaths of two hikers in Mexico. The reasonings for the killings of these two was sickeningly similar. They were killed for simply being in the forest. Despite multiple claims since their founding, the validity of their involvement has yet to be verified. Without further evidence present, it is hard to tell whether any of their claims hold truth. Many believe that ITS used and will continue to use similar claims to invoke fear without having any involvement at all. Human trafficking is one of the fastest growing and profitable criminal enterprises in the world. It is estimated that globally, $32 billion yearly is made exploiting human beings' freedoms through acts of both forced slavery and sex trafficking. The organization Not For Sale has a mission statement to end modern slavery and exploitation. And over the past 14 years, they have provided aid to over 271,000 people and throughout 12 countries that are considered high risk of human trafficking. President and co-founder David Bastone formed Not For Sale after a disturbing discovery found while visiting his favorite restaurant in San Francisco. David discovered that this restaurant was the center of a human trafficking ring in San Francisco that saw waves of teenagers taken from their homes around Bangalore, India, and forced into modern-day slavery. This eye-opening discovery led David to publish a book titled Not For Sale, exposing human trafficking, and his research led him to meet Kru Nam, a woman from northern Thailand who actively saved targeted children. Kru Nam and David would bond, forming a relationship over a promise from David to provide shelter and food for the children Kru Nam had saved. This promise blossomed into what Not For Sale stands for today, and actively supports victims globally. Aaron Valenti was an active volunteer for Not For Sale, and like David, was strong-willed and determined. This next statement might hang on the hinges of conspiratorial, but is it possible Aaron Valenti discovered a situation similar to what David had seen before her? Did Aaron stumble upon shocking evidence of human trafficking within one of her favorite hangarounds, or possibly the involvement of a coworker, or a peer within the human trafficking ring? This idea is not backed by much evidence and is merely an observation, so I'll leave it at that. On October 26, 2019, a blog posting would surface on a website named thefrankreport.com, holding the title, "Are Thomas Reardon's Experiments on Brave Wave Interfaces Connected to Aaron Valenti's Death?" Forever imposing the question and imprinting the theory into the reader's minds, The Frank Report is a website created and managed by Frank Parlato, an investigative journalist with cited works across hundreds of news outlets across five continents. Frank's work is also credited as helping to take down Nexium. Nexium, on the surface level, was a multi-level marketing and personal development company that offered large group awareness trainings through its executive success programs. But underneath, it was a cult focused on sex trafficking, forced labor, and racketeering. In 2019, Frank would act as a consultant and lead investigator for the producer of a two-hour-long documentary, The Lost Women of Nexium, which aired on Investigation Discovery. He would also be credited in multiple shows spanning networks like HBO, Stars, and A&E for his work. So in reading an article on The Frank Report about Aaron Valenti, one might believe it holds credence. The article is brief, and it features two direct quotes from a blog posting on Medium.com titled Mind Control that Aaron Valenti posted on Tinker Ventures' Twitter feed. The article focuses on Control Labs, CTRL-Labs, a company led by neuroscientist and Internet Explorer creator Thomas Reardon. Frank's content writer is sure to point out that Reardon is a high-standing figure but lacks background information. The Frank Report's article alludes to the fact that Aaron was involved in this line of work based on the idea that Tinker Ventures had their hands in many companies, and solely based on this shared Medium.com article. The captured quotes in the Frank Report article are as follows. "The future of brain-machine interfaces is non-invasive. Instead of surgical implants, Control Labs uses state-of-the-art detection and machine learning to read your neurons from outside the body. The first step will be technology precisely picking up the signals from inside your body to control devices outside of it with little more than natural gestures. The next step, and we are already closer than most people realize, will be reading the intention directly from your brain. Control Labs is pioneering something entirely new at the intersection of biology and code. He did this by assembling a rare cadre of scientists and technologists, PhDs in computational neuroscience, biomechanics paired with hackers and coders, experts in signal processing, machine learning, in human-computer interactions, and industrial designers. Frank believes that Erin might have found out something she shouldn't have, and was confrontational with Reardon about it. He alludes to the fact that this disagreement ultimately led to her death. At the end of the Frank Report article, he leaves the readers with quotes from Erin's final conversation with her parents. Quoting, "Mind control equals neurocontrol. We are in the Matrix. It's all a game. A thought experiment." End quote. Honestly, I think this theory is weak, but given Frank's background as an investigative journalist and his work taking down Nexium, is it worth a second thought? But despite the endless debate and wild speculation, despite what you, the viewer, might theorize about the cause of Erin Valenti's death, for her friends, family, and colleagues, Erin's story is that of a tragic loss of someone who was in the prime of her life and career. She was beloved and an inspiration for those around her. She was a loving daughter and wife who put time into helping to make the world a better place whilst climbing the ladder of success. She is also remembered fondly by those close to her and those who didn't know her, as evidenced by the outpouring of grief and sympathy online, and the memorial set up in her honor at the site of her discovery. Since the events of her passing, her family has created the Erin Valenti Leader in Entrepreneurship Endowed Scholarship at the University of Utah. This scholarship has the stated goal of honoring Erin's passion for entrepreneurship by supporting young and aspiring business leaders. If you wish to make a donation in honor of Erin Valenti, you will find a link to the scholarship in the description below. Hey guys, that is it for this one. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have questions about today's episode, or if you'd like to reach out to us directly, you can do so by sending us an email at creepyunsolvedmedia@gmail.com. Until next time, be sure to check out our awesome content by simply visiting creepyunsolved.com. If you are active on YouTube, be sure to check out our channel over there, under the name Creepy Unsolved. Also, while you wait for the next episode of Creepy Unsolved, be sure to leave us a rating and review. This will help our podcast grow. Until next time, this is Dylan, signing off.